This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia has just banned the import, use and manufacture of three so-called forever chemicals. And they're called that because they don't break down and they can build up inside our bodies and the environment. But in Europe, they're pushing to ban all 14,000 of them as a precaution. To help us understand why this matters to everyday life, from the water we drink to the products we use, we're joined by Bhavna Midha, who's a senior research fellow in environmental sociology at RMIT. Bhavna, welcome to Drive.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with the name Forever Chemicals. It sounds like something from a sci-fi movie. What actually makes them forever?
It does, doesn't it? It's exactly what it says. These chemicals have very long lifespans. They resist breaking down in normal environmental conditions. They disperse really quickly. They're very mobile, but they're still very persistent. They're bioaccumulative. That means they accumulate inside human bodies and other bodies as well. So that's the reason they've been called forever chemicals.
So essentially, if we get...
They just can't be destroyed.
If we accumulate some of them in our own bodies, we can't get rid of them. So it keeps accumulating on top of each other, does it, until we get a higher concentration?
I guess so. That's what bioaccumulation is. But there are lots of processes by which it does leave our body. Uh-huh. It just doesn't break down within our body, our bodies. But yes, you're right. If we keep drinking... water that is laced with PFAS at a higher level than what's safe, then bioaccumulation will be more toxic. But if it is within the safe levels, which is another story, it should be fine and our bodies should be able to get rid of it at some rate, but it'll still stay.
Bhavna, now we're talking about things people use every day. We use things like cookware, carpets, even food packaging. Mm-hmm. Where are we most likely to come across these chemicals in our daily life?
Look, the daily exposure is called a low-dose exposure. And like you said, it comes in anything that has been made water repellent, stain proof. So any of those stain proof sprays that we put on our sofas and stuff, couches, waterproof is the non-sticks. Now we get a lot of non-stick pans that don't have PFAS, depends on whether they're labeled as such or not. One of the most toxic ones has now been banned in Australia for quite a few years, so you won't get any nonstick which has the PFOA anyway. But there are a few that still have a certain kind of PFAS. So I guess that's the issue of why the article was written, that while certain PFAS chemicals like PFOA have been banned, what about the others? And how do we get rid of the others as well? And are they as toxic as the ones that are banned?
Just on that, I mean, you mentioned then that we spray our furniture with these stain-proof things. I'm thinking I've even done that. And when you're spraying something like an aerosol onto your furniture, I mean, surely we're also inhaling that at the same time. Is that correct?
Look, I guess so, but I don't want to create a panic as well. The exposure, like I said, is low dose. We just don't know enough about the health effects. We know about the health effects when it happens in higher doses, like it's happened with firefighting foam in Australia as well and all over the world. We know about the toxic effects and the health effects when it's happened, say, in the U.S. around the 3M and the DuPont factories. We know that there were toxic chemicals that were put into the drinking water supplies. But all of this low-dose chemicals, right now, there isn't much research around them. And that's the reason that the approach that Europe has taken is being kind of called precautionary approach. And the approach that we have here is a risk-based approach where the risk has been proven or evidenced. And that's why those three chemicals are banned here now. I have to say, Australia doesn't produce any of these chemicals, so we basically import them in products. That's it.
When we When we hear the word ban, Bhavna, we often wonder, does that mean we're suddenly, you know, unsafe until more are banned as such? And if we do apply this precautionary principle, knowing that there could potentially be harm, wouldn't it be, it's the right thing to do to actually ban them until they were proven safe, as opposed to using them until we find that they're actually toxic?
Yeah, well, that's what some people believe, that is the way to go, that the burden of proving or giving evidence should lie with the chemical companies in proving that these are safe, rather than for the people who are being affected or society or governments to prove they're unsafe and then ban them. So that's the principle that's the precautionary principle. I do have to say that there's something in the middle called essential use, where bans happen, but certain products are then, or sectors are then removed from those restrictions or from those bans because they are really essential for, say, something like medical equipment, mm-hmm. Or other things that are just not replaceable in the short term. So they are not put within those bans. So bans are also of many different kinds. From between the time that I wrote this article and now that I'm doing this interview, there have been a few changes as well. Europe has gone ahead and started removing products and sectors, lots of them, like electronics, from this ban as well. So where they are talking still about all of the chemicals, they have started taking out products and sectors from that ban because it's really difficult to find replacements at such a short notice.
I was going to ask you, do any safer alternatives exist yet, or are we sort of stuck with forever chemicals?
In terms of, say, the European Union approving any alternatives, there aren't too many. But people are still trying to find alternatives. There is this website called Marketplace. I think it's a European website. But that's where people just come up with certain alternatives and try to sell them. So that people can have the option of PFAS-free. You know, almost like saying, if you don't want to use nonstick, use nonstick, why not go back to steel or cast iron, carbon steel, you know? So in that sense, yes, for a few things there might be alternatives, but medical equipment rely on PFAS, electronics, electroplating, much of the food packaging as well, but there are bans that have been applied to that in Europe as well in certain countries.
If you've just joined us, I'm chatting with Bhavna Midha from RMIT about forever chemicals and why Australia has only banned three of them and why Europe is going down a different path. Just on that, in terms of the chemicals themselves, if you look at them and they're in electronics and there may not be an alternative, you can understand, okay, yes, we need to have them in our electronics, but I suppose they're confined within, you know, the insides of whatever electronic device it is. Do we need to therefore look at our disposal and waste processes to ensure that at the end of that life, at the end of the life of the electronic product, it doesn't just go into landfill and then leach into the environment?
Exactly. I think you've kind of answered your own question, that that is the point then, that there are different places at which these interventions happen. They could happen while the manufacturing is happening, either of the chemical or the product. It could happen when the exposure is happening. So depending on whether the exposure is direct, like food packaging, that's very direct, right? Drinking water, it's very direct. Electronic, a little bit less direct. So that's when interventions can happen. Interventions can happen during monitoring. If you raise the safe levels, you know, then things might pass through. But if you lower them, then a higher level of PFAS will not pass through. And the end point, yes, is when it gets disposed. You know that these are harmful, these contain harmful chemicals. So these need to be disposed of responsibly. Almost like, you know, those lithium batteries that we are supposed to be really responsible for them. They're not just a matter of recycling or not recycling. They are dangerous in many senses. So they need to be disposed of responsibly.
Is it, do things like, let's take food packaging and containers, for example. Does heating them in something like a microwave or what have you, does that increase the exposure to these forever chemicals? Or does it not make any difference? If we use them, we get exposed anyway.
I would not be the best person to answer that, but I would try and not use them for heating anyway. Like heating in plastic is has been a big no-no for a while now, especially in microwaves because of the high heat. In certain areas, of course, they don't melt. They call themselves microwave safe, but we don't know what kind of chemicals are leaching into the food. Microwave popcorn bags, a few of them as well. And anything that's been made grease-proof, I mean, that was the magic of PFAS, right? It made things grease-proof. Oh. It made things water-repellent. It was great. Like the aqueous firefighting foam, it helped in petroleum fires. So any of these magic properties that materials have, they need to be, avoided.
Come with the cost. Let's hope we find some alternatives. Just finally, Bhavna, let's look ahead. I think Australia's Senate committee is due to report back later this year. What do you reckon is the most sensible path forward for us?
Look, I think Australia has a chance. Because we don't make the chemicals here, we are maybe on an easier path than Europe or China or US. It's just the importing of those products, so it might be a little bit easier. Not that it's easy. I don't think I should use that term. So it might be thinking about what kind of products are imported and what kind of labeling happens on them, like eco-labeling. Even knowing that it has PFAS, like you said, with disposal, it'll help. So that makes a lot of difference. Thinking about water safety levels, we know that there might not be as much PFAS in the environment as maybe in other toxic areas. Still thinking about safe levels being monitored at a level that is equivalent to the world level or European or US level as well. So those are the kind of things that can slowly come into place, which then lead us towards the precautionary principle. Thinking about the products that will need to be ultimately replaced. So if bans do extend to other chemicals, then what are those essential products that need to be provided alternatives for? Thinking ahead of that might be one of the ways to plan ahead as well.
I'm in the meantime, no plastic containers for me. I'm going back to glass in the microwave.
I think, not being a scientist, I can't scientifically say yes to that, but yes, I think that's something good to start off with.
Bhavna, great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. That was Bhavna Midar, who's a senior research fellow in environmental sociology at RMIT University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.